Good morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Wednesday, the 26th of August, 2020. My name's Nick here in Melbourne, starting with Sydney-based diversified financial services company, AMP. It has been in the news a lot lately for all the wrong reasons. A lot of cultural issues where there's been sexual harassment claims, rather shocking ones, dealt with rather disappointingly to most people's opinion. And this is just on the back of many, many stories of corporate ineptitude and, you know, management issues stemming from the Hayne Royal Commission and a number of other things. Now, the Australian newspaper has mentioned they have some inside industry sources mentioning that there are a lot of private equity buyers and other corporate entities sort of circling around AMP ready to pounce. They mentioned that there are several potential buyers interested in the business, but some are sort of waiting for either the fallout from this latest round of resignations is sort of settled, or the stock price to fall further. They quote someone saying, "Everyone is looking, but no one is biting." So yeah, in the past, Macquarie Group and KKR have been known to be interested in the business, and now they've got rid of their life business. It does make the overall offering a lot more attractive to a number of corporates. There is some analysis showing that, you know, the book value of the AMP Capital division is worth almost as much as the market cap of the company. So therefore, you know, there's potential for a lot of value to be unleashed by breaking the business up. In terms of the stock price, it hasn't performed too badly considering what's happened in the last year. It's only down about 10% of the last 12 months and down about 14% in the last month alone. I do have a holding in AMP. Moving to Virgin Airlines. Now, the administrator, Deloitte, have issued a report outlining sort of what went wrong with the business. It's not all that surprising. I think most people with a business understanding would probably have already put this together. However, it interestingly did mention that he thought the business could have been insolvent from as early as the 22nd of March. And that was about the time when the government put the moratorium on director liability for insolvencies, i.e. you couldn't get done for not declaring insolvency. Now, basically, in terms of the strategic problems, it's stuff that has been reported before. The airline, you know, was very profitable as Virgin Blue, low cost, had a nice little niche. However, that was getting eaten away by Jetstar. So they decided to go upmarket and compete with Qantas head on. Unfortunately, you know, they had to borrow a lot of money to do that, which made their cost base higher than Qantas, and Qantas was not going to give up on its turf of business and corporate travel, you know, large networks, high frequency services. So it, you know, launched a price war in which they were the sort of the weaker competitor. It caused a lot of issues, you know, made the company burn a lot of money. And you know, that's just sort of built up over the last 10 years. The other things they point to was continued operation of loss-making services, routes and business segments, operational inefficiencies. So for example, all the crewing was done at Brisbane when obviously most of the domestic markets in Sydney and Melbourne. So there's a lot of, you know, overnight stays and accommodation costs apparently with that. The revenue did grow over the last 10 years. However, it wasn't a profitable growth. Basically the strategy failed, and that's where it's ended up. Okay, moving to ESG investing. It's a really growing part of the market. In Europe, there's been hundreds of billions of inflows in the last year into funds ESG related. And we're seeing similar trends here in Australia. We've got, for example, the BeachShares ESG ETF. There's also Perpetual launching a couple of ESG related funds this year for the Australian market. Now, one of the perennial issues is with ESG is what actually is in these portfolios and are they legitimately ESG compliant? It's very hard to measure a lot of these things. even things such as governance is very hard to measure, and particularly supply chains with complicated global networks these days. Even if a company says it doesn't use sweatshop in its manufacturing, who knows if their supplier shares those views. It's very hard to drill down at that level. Now, the European Union has been doing a lot in this area to try and build sort of a common set of standards to allow capital markets to clearly be able to see where these things are being adhered to and allocate accordingly. So some of the things they've looked at or put in place is the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation. And then we've also got the European SRI Transparency Code that they're working on at the moment. Now, in the US, we're not seeing that same level of sort of momentum. There's been a lot of pushback from the US government against these sorts of styles of investing, particularly for pensions. They don't want people's pension money to be sort of put in these areas. They think it's, you know, in the fiduciary duty of the pension fund managers to, you know, work around maximizing returns only, and not these sort of other objectives for investment. So the CFA Institute, which they developed the GIPS or GIPS, the Global Investment Performance Standards, which is sort of an industry benchmark for measuring performance between funds. You know, it allows people to compare performance, you know, on an equal basis. So comparing apples with apples, they are looking at doing something similar here. Now, they propose that asset managers would identify whether their funds had any of six ESG related features. Those features map to a common sustainable investment style, like funds that integrate ESG factors into their risk analysis, follow themes like social justice or water management, or engage portfolio companies. Now, investment managers can pick which of their funds they manage adhere to any of these elements, and then they would then sort of, you know, have to prove that that's the case. Now, if it's anything like GIPS, it is more a, you know, you attest that you comply, and then, you know, there's not really a request at all. It's something that you sort of have to, you know, adhere to yourself. So certainly something positive there in this murky and very difficult to navigate world of ESG investing. Moving to the markets now, the US has opened up just a little bit this morning, about an hour after open. S&P's up about 5 bips. We've got some positive news out of Europe. Some Germany business sentiment surveys are showing improvements after a big decline, so looking better in Europe. And also there's news that the next round of the US-China trade talks, both sides still intend to carry those out. So positive news there. It's worth mentioning the S&P is up about 5% this month, and since the bottom back in March, it's up about 50%. Coming up later this week, we've got the annual Jackson Hole meeting of the Fed Reserve. Now, that is the governors of the Fed Reserve. That is normally held in Wyoming. It's being held online for this year. So hopefully we'll get a bit more clarity on what the Fed plans to do with, you know, what tools they want to use to keep rates low, and where they see their comfort levels of inflation going looking forward. Some analysts expect that they'll be happy to let inflation rise above the 2% target band to sort of compensate for several years now with below target inflation. So certainly important things affecting, you know, the global economy there. In Australia, we have a few companies reporting, and that is your update for Wednesday. Have a great day.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.